Okay, come on up. Take your time getting settled in. Let me just call the case number 23-11478, Donald Lyons versus Salo Incorporated. Mr. Garman, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court. My name is Matt Garman. I represent Don Lyons in this case. We are here because on July 2nd, 2019, Don Lyons had a drop fire with a Carr CW9 pistol. He saw the muzzle flash. He heard the bang. The bullet trajectory was upward from right to left. There's evidence in the case of five other drop fires with this Carr CW9 pistol. And what brought us here today is
this pistol or this model. Type of model?
This model, the Carr CW9. And we are here today because at the trial court level, the district court heard conflicting expert testimony from battling experts who disagreed. We feel the court misunderstood the defects present.
I honestly have trouble understanding what your theory of causation and defect are. What your expert, the best I can tell, and just correct me if I'm wrong, your expert said, look, there must have been some kind of debris or something in the gun, and that debris combined with the fall from the plaintiff's hip allowed the gun to fire. Is that the theory?
I believe that's correct. Okay. If I could just clear that up. So
please.
Chuck Powell's opinion, the plaintiff's expert, is that there are two defects in this gun. The first defect is what's known as a drop fire defect, whereby if the gun falls and it hits the ground, the trigger moves rearward, just like a user was pulling the trigger.
But not enough to fire the gun, correct? It'll move the trigger, but not into a firing position. I'm not a gun enthusiast, so I don't really know what I should be saying, but it's not enough to make the thing go off.
Right, so when the gun is cocked, the trigger is 75 to 80% to the rear. And bear in mind that with these parts, where the tolerances between the parts, between the cam that holds back the striker, you're talking hundredths of an inch.
But so to Judge Brasher's question, theory number one doesn't get you where you need to go, correct? It gets you a half-cocked gun,
correct.
Half-triggered gun or whatever.
Correct. The two defects work together in tandem. So the first defect is the drop fire defect, whereby the trigger moves all the way to the rear. The second defect is with the disconnector tab. So the disconnector tab in this pistol is exposed. The whole purpose is if the gun is out of battery, the trigger is not supposed to pull. That's the function of the disconnector. The defect in this gun with the disconnector is that the disconnector is exposed such that there is friction between the slide that you rack back and forth and the disconnector, which makes the disconnector, which pulls the disconnector forward. Now, if the disconnector is pulled forward, the trigger is pulled even more to the rear. So when you have these two things working together, the drop fire defect and the disconnector tab defect, that's what allows it to fire. So what Chuck Powell did is he did 10 drop tests with an exemplar pistol. On the 11th drop test, he took a piece of polymer and put it on the disconnector tab so that the disconnector tab would be pulled back, because that's what he saw in the Lyons gun in the subject pistol. He took the exemplar, he put it in the same condition as the Lyons gun.
So what's the underlying evidence that debris or polymer or whatever was either part of the design of the gun or naturally occurring in the gun or in the gun at the time of the accident?
So the evidence that Mr. Powell found with regard to the disconnector tab, that was done at the inspection and the CT scan of the pistol. In the expert report, which is document 58-5, it is photograph 12 and photograph 19. There you can see, he could see that the disconnector tab was pulled forward. And that it was damaged from wear from the slide because it was exposed. It was exposed when it left Carr, the manufacturer. That's the way that it was designed. So to answer your question, Judge Brasher, you have to have those two defects acting together, and that is what Chuck Powell testified to at the summary judgment hearing, where he gave the plaintiff's theory is that there's two defects. And you had the defense expert, Derek Watkins, give the opposite opinion, that there are no defects. So we had dueling experts.
But to go back to Judge Newsom's question and the one that Judge Brasher started out with, for the second one, so you agree that you need both theories to survive to get you to a jury, right?
Yes, Judge. The first theory, the drop fire defect, pulls the trigger all the way to the rear.
But doesn't get it to fire.
Right. The disconnector tab pulls it the rest of the way.
Okay. So what's the evidence? Because I think of the three options that Judge Newsom gave you, the one that the expert was going on was the third, right? That after Mr. Lyons purchased his gun, something went into the mechanism which would have allowed the gun to discharge during a drop fire.
Correct.
I still don't understand what evidence there is in the record that this gun had that problem at the time of discharge.
Well, the evidence in the record is the inspection that the experts did of the gun.
And what did they find?
Well, they examined the disconnector tab, and they found that there was damage to the disconnector tab that was caused by wear from the slide and by debris getting into the gun and allowing the disconnector to be pulled forward.
But they didn't find the debris. The debris is sort of an inference that they've drawn from the damage or something, is that right?
Correct. So, but that's analogous to a case that we cite in our brief, which is Seaman versus Remington Arms, where the 11th Circuit found that there was a jury question because there were, the theory in that case is that you had a sear and another part, and Remington designed the rifle such that debris could get in between those two parts and allow them to not function and allow the rifle to fire. That's directly analogous to the disconnector tab issue with this gun, and in that case, the Seaman case, the 11th Circuit ruled there was a fact question with regard to the that defect and the wear and tear and Remington designing the gun such that debris could get into it to allow it to fire. That's the same thing that happened with the disconnector tab.
Okay, so now the district court knocks out one theory, right?
Yes.
And then on the other theory, allows it to go forward, but then says you don't have evidence to support it or prop it up.
Correct. So the district court found that the drop fire defect was not relevant because it doesn't matter if there's not a partial pulling of the trigger. The partial pulling of the trigger is the disconnector tab being pulled forward, because as the disconnector tab is pulled forward, the trigger is pulled backward. So that's where I think the district court misunderstood that defect.
Yeah, it seems like your theory really, and the district court's, the correctness of the district court's judgment really turns on whether there's evidence in the record that this particular gun, and I mean the one used by the plaintiff, not the model, had the disconnector tab debris problem, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You agree that that's kind of the key issue in the case?
I believe so. And so
the record, you say the record evidence of that is your expert's analysis of the gun when he looked at it?
Yes. And he found that the disconnector tab could be pulled forward either by debris or by friction between the disconnector. So that if you're looking at the gun, the disconnector tab is on the bottom where the receiver is. You have the slide on the top. He found the disconnector tab could be pulled forward by either debris or by friction from the slide.
Did he find that this particular gun, the disconnector tab, had been pulled forward?
Yes, Judge. That was his opinion.
Where exactly is that?
So that is in the expert report document 58-5. I don't have the paragraph number. I think it's 6.7 that deals with the disconnector tab. And then he also testified to that at the motion for summary judgment hearing under oath. He said it has two defects, the drop fire defect, and then he testified the second defect is the lack of protection of the large disconnector tab on the side. Movement of the slide or any kind of debris that gets in that cavity pulls the disconnector tab forward, which moves the trigger rearward. And he found, and he put this in his report, that if the disconnector tab is pulled forward, which pulls the trigger rearward, then the energy needed for the gun to go bang is reduced by 92%.
Can I ask you one other?
No, you go first.
So just one other before you, your time concludes. There's quite the chain of custody of this gun. Is there evidence that any defect existed in this gun at the time it left the manufacturer's hands?
I believe the evidence shows that the disconnector defect, the reason it's defective is because it is not covered. So debris can get into it, the friction from the slide can pull it back. It came that way from car.
So you just say it's a design defect that existed from the outset.
Yes.
I just want to make clear what the theory is.
Yes, that's correct.
I was going to ask the same question that Judge Newsom asked in a slightly different way. The district court says this, page 36 of its order. There is no genuine dispute that whatever caused the damage to the disconnector tab and or a partial trigger pull was not in the subject pistol at the time it left Carr's possession. Is that accurate or is that just wrong?
I would disagree with that assertion. Okay. It's the plaintiff's theory that both of the defects, the drop fire defect, the disconnector tab defect, were present in the gun when it left Carr. Yeah. But
the district court may not be saying what you're objecting to. In other words, the district court is saying whatever you're saying that there's a design defect. Because when it left, it had the potential for this debris to go in there and cause the disconnector problem, right?
Yes.
What the district court is saying is that at the time it left Carr's possession, there was no such debris causing the disconnector problem. Both of those things can be true.
That's true, but there would have been friction from the slide that could also cause the disconnector problem. So the reason for the disconnector problem is the debris and the slide friction. The slide friction would have been present when it left Carr.
Right. So I've got document 58.5 in front of me. And just when you sit down, I hope you have that. Would you just pull that up and look at it? And when you come up and reply, point to me where the expert says this subject gun had this disconnector tab problem. Because I see a lot in here about how the gun as a model has the problem that it could lead to this issue, but I'm having trouble, and it's partly because I don't understand expertise. I'm having trouble figuring out where he says the thing that you say he says.
Yes, Judge, I can direct you back to that. But the broader point is we have dueling experts and conflicting testimony, conflicting facts, and that's why we are here.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've got your time for rebuttal. Mr. Renzulli.
May it please the court. Christopher Renzulli on behalf of Salo, Inc. And first and foremost, thank you for allowing me to be here today. Appreciate that. The Carr Arms pistol does not drop fire. It has been established throughout the record, depositions, expert reports, expert testimony.
You've got a problem with that assertion from the get-go. Because this one drop fired if you believe the plaintiff's testimony.
Yeah.
And you have to believe his testimony at summary judgment. Now, that doesn't mean that your client is on the hook. It doesn't mean there was a design defect. It doesn't mean that it malfunctioned. Mm-hmm. But what Mr. Lyons testified to and the trajectory of the bullet indicates that there was a drop fire at summary judgment. You don't agree with that?
I agree with, they take the facts in the light most beneficial to the plaintiffs. Trajectory of the bullet, I do take issue with that because it's not there. Mr. Powell.
What's not there?
The trajectory of the bullet going in an upward direction.
That's not in the record?
Mr. Powell said it based upon a police report which does not support that. The only testing that was done in this case was done by Mr. Watkins, which was undisputed by the plaintiff to show that it wasn't in an upward trajectory. It was more across. But I don't think that that's a material fact in this case. I don't think that's there.
Mr. Lyons didn't testify about the trajectory of the bullet in his testimony, in his deposition?
100%. You testified to what the trajectory was, and we have to accept that as true for today. But it's not a material fact.
Yeah, can I listen? So it seems to me like the district court, maybe, I don't know whether the district court was right at the end of the day, but it does seem like the district court might have misunderstood some of plaintiff's theory here, because it seems like the plaintiff didn't have two separate theories of causation or defect, that the plaintiff's theory was really that there were two problems with the gun that then worked together to cause the drop fire. I mean, do you agree that's the thing we should be talking about and not looking at them as separate?
No, I respectfully think that Judge Burke got it right. And here's the reason. For the first defect, the claim defect, it's the striker block. When you pull the trigger of the pistol fully to the rear, the striker block moves out of the way. So if the gun is put in the parlor trick the way Mr. Powell did, and the trigger is all the way rearward, almost to the point where it goes off, the video shows his hand shaking. No gun is ever in that condition. In that position, and you drop it, it's going to go bang, because the trigger is going to be pulled all the way rearward. It's obvious. So the striker block would move out of the way. There was never any evidence that anyone could get one of these firearms to discharge because of a striker block moving out of the way. The striker block is built in suspenders. It's only there, and the evidence supports it. The striker block is there just to prevent a striker, if somehow a part breaks and it moves off of the cocking cam, it hits that striker block, it can't hit the primer. That's all the striker block did. In fact, the expert, Mr. Watkins, took the striker block out of firearms, these firearms, and dropped them. It's not necessary. It didn't go bang. The striker block is only there as belt and suspenders. That's a red herring here. It has nothing to do with this case. And even Mr. Powell, in his testimony, said that's not the cause here. It had nothing to do with the striker block. So we go to the Hail Mary, as the court called it. We go to the parlor trick. And it's not just debris. It's not just debris that we're talking about here. This is, he took a Glock pistol, and he cut out a piece of polymer, and he carefully stuck it in with tweezers. Now, how does it get in there? No testimony the pistol's defective because it can get in there, because there's no way of doing it other than carefully taking the slide off, jamming that in there, or he took a piece of cartridge, and he cut the cartridge case, and then he stuck that in between the trigger bar and the side of the slide, and carefully puts it back together. You can do that with every firearm, Your Honors. You can do it with a Glock and a Smith & Wesson and a SIG and a Colt and all the other ones out there. If the trigger is held to the rear, it's going to go bang when it's not supposed to. So this was an add-on. As Judge Burke said, this was all about the striker block. And when it was clear that the striker block had absolutely nothing to do with this case, they went to the debris issue. And this is not burnt powder, like the Remington case, Remington 700. It's not burnt powder. It's not something that you would find in a gun. This is a piece of polymer, and this is a piece of brass. You're not going to find that in it. And there's been testimony.
That was his test, right? Yes. I mean, I think the polymer was the way the expert sort of tried to test it, by sticking a specific kind of debris in there.
Mm-hmm.
The question that we were asking opposing counsel was just, and so I want to get your thought on this too.
Sure.
I mean, is there evidence that this gun had debris in it? And by this gun, I mean not the model, but the specific gun that the plaintiff used had some kind of debris problem with it?
Absolutely not. There was no testimony in that regard. In fact, there's Mr. Powell said that this gun didn't come out of the factory with any problems with the disconnect. That's not normal wear and tear, counselor. That's what he told me. It's not normal wear and tear. But now I hear my colleague over here is saying, well, that comes from normal wear and tear. It does not. Powell is clear on that. This is not normal wear and tear. This gun was in someone else's possession for 10 years before Mr. Lyons bought it at an auction.
Well, I guess that's a different issue, though. Mm-hmm. I guess my question is just, is there any evidence that there was a problem with it?
No.
Okay. But you would say there's no evidence there's a problem with it, but if there was a problem with it, it wasn't normal wear and tear that led to the problem. Is that what you're saying?
If there was a problem, which there was not, it was something that would have happened to happen within the 10 years after Carr Arms sold this firearm. It absolutely did not leave the factory in any kind of condition with any problem with the disconnect or tab, and that is conceded by plaintiff's expert.
Okay, explain to me the testimony from both sides with regards to the so-called damage that existed when the subject pistol was examined by the experts.
Thank you, Judge Jordan. Number one, there's a disconnector tab and there's marks on it. Nobody knows how they got there. Nobody. Powell, plaintiff's expert, I don't know how they got there. It's what he told me. And Watkins, Carr's expert, I have no idea. It could have been someone with a screwdriver. It could be someone with pliers. It's someone who had the gun for 10 years. Now, that is nothing to do with keeping the trigger in a rearward position. You have to take this debris. You got to take this polymer. You got to take this cartridge case and stick it in there. That's not normal. That forecloses any liability of Carr. That's an intervening act by someone. And the fact that the friction issue, even Judge Burke said, with regard to the friction, it never came up in the report. It came up at one point in his testimony when I deposed him, and he said, you know what? I think I saw a little friction there. Where is it in your report? I don't have it. Do I have pictures, photographs, video? Nothing, nothing, nothing. Okay. But what's most important, and Judge Burke picked up on this immediately, is the trigger always returned to the full position. It never hung up. It never got caught up. It never got caught up like Mr. Powell did in his experiment, his Hail Mary, to try to get this thing to drop fire. The Hail Mary that he did, with putting those foreign matters in, it wasn't even in his report. And the only way I got to that before the deposition transcript was going to the court and saying he needs to give us his testimony. Was he ever able to get this gun to drop fire? Judge Burke interceded. I was able to ask him those questions. That's when he told me about the parlor trick. The parlor trick is not something that shows a defect in the firearm when it left Carr's control. Period. The first theory, Judge Burke was on all fours. There was no abuse of discretion there. Mr. Powell said it. And some people say he asked the same question over and over again because I like the answer. You may not like it sometime. This time he always gave me that same answer. Not causally related to the discharge. Clear. On the second theory, there are three different parts of it. I think it's an attempt at artful crafting of the appeal, where we go to the third theory of defect, which was not raised down below. And the reason why they went to that third theory, the fact that foreign material can get into the disconnector, increases the likelihood of wear and tear, when Mr. Powell said under oath, this has nothing to do with wear and tear. The reason why they went there is because of Judge Burke. Because Judge Burke, in his ruling, said, quote, the plaintiff never presented any evidence or even argument that based on Carr's design for the CW9 pistol, debris of foreign material capable of causing a trigger pull, such as brass or polymer, can collect in the pistol during ordinary use. So they took that and they said, aha, now we'll go to the appellate court and say that's our new theory. There's no evidence that during ordinary use this can occur. Powell gives it to us, the testing gives it to us, and there's no material fact that's in dispute. That cannot happen. The plaintiffs have not shown that the design is sufficiently unsafe to render it defective or susceptible to a drop fire. This is like the Sears case, Your Honor. I guess that was Judge Red Jones in his concurring opinion. This is a classic failure of proof case, not a weight of the evidence. There's failure to prove a prima facie case, and that's what we have here, a failure to prove a prima facie case. Judge Burke got it right. I ask that the court affirm the judgment below.
Okay, thank you very much.
Judge Brasher, to your question, document 58-5, which is Charles Powell's expert report, on page 5, paragraph 6.8, mm-hmm. deals with the disconnector tab. Towards the end of that paragraph, it says, as the slide closes, frictional contact can drag the disconnector tab forward and partially pull the pistol's trigger. This greatly reduces the amount of frame flex or impact force to release the striker lug from the cocking cam. That just means to make the gun go bang. He goes on to say, the design of the disconnector tab and its location on the car model pistols is defective in that it allows mechanical damage and frictional contact with the slide during movement. When the disconnector is dragged forward, the energy to discharge the pistol is reduced by 92%. So that clearly in his expert report, well before he was deposed, he puts forth the disconnector tab defect theory. It's there in paragraph 6.8. Again, it's not the debris in the disconnector tab that is the design defect. It's the fact that the disconnector tab is not protected. It allows debris to get in there, that it can be pulled forward by friction from the slide. The fact that the disconnector tab is not protected, that is the second defect. And that was present when the gun left car, which is directly analogous to the Seaman case that we cite in our brief.
So just one more time. Is there evidence in the record that this gun's disconnector tab was affected by debris?
Yes.
Okay, where is that?
That is in, paragraph 6.8.
Well, that's the theory about how the defect exists, that it could be affected by debris.
Yes. If you go forward in the report to the photographs and graphs section, you have the pictures of the disconnector tab that start on page 26 of the report that show the damage.
So like photograph 3, for example, or photograph 4, I don't really know what I'm looking at with these.
I'm sorry, if you're looking at 58-5, document 58-5, mm-hmm. Page 5 talks about the theory, and then on page 26 of the report, you have the photographs of the disconnector tab that shows the damage to the tab. And I don't have the picture in front of me, but there is a picture of, in the report, of the side of the pistol that shows the disconnector tab pulled forward in this pistol, and Mr. Powell was able to measure the fact that it was pulled forward, and that is a photograph that is in the expert report.
Okay, I've got the pictures, so I'll make a note that these are the pictures.
Thank you, Judge.
All right, thank you both very much.
Thank you.